Hey, good morning, everyone. While this is loading, and before I start, I just wanted to mention something that I found while I was preparing my talk. That's not really relevant, but on the, I noticed on the web that there's a new product out there now with soda that includes marijuana. So I just thought that was fascinating. Anyway, given the number of changes in the laws and regulations governing medical marijuana since I submitted my abstract initially for this talk, I've actually changed the title of my talk from Community Responses to Laws in States Decriminalizing Medical Marijuana to Our Federal Actions Regarding the Operation of Medical Marijuana Dispensaries at Odds with Public Health and Safety Goals. I have no conflicts of interest to disclose. By my count, 17 states in the District of Columbia have passed laws decriminalizing medical marijuana. And this map shows the states, with California being the first in 1996, and the states in light green are the states that have proposed legislation decriminalizing medical marijuana. Delaware, which is the most recent state to pass one of these laws, should be in darker green, but I wasn't able to do that. The states that have passed laws generally allow patients to use and possess, and in most states cultivate, small quantities of marijuana for medical purposes with varying degrees of regulation without being subject to state criminal penalties. The laws allow a patient's caregiver, who is an adult who agrees to assist with a patient's medical use of marijuana, to possess and in most cases cultivate but not use marijuana. And the variations across the states is interesting, however, with respect to a number of factors. These include, for example, the medical conditions that qualify a patient to receive medical marijuana and the amounts that individuals or their caretakers may possess or cultivate for therapeutic use. So these amounts not only vary across the states, but in addition, they're not pegged to any particular medical condition. And the amounts range from 1 ounce and no plant in Maryland, which has one of the most recent and most restrictive laws, to 24 ounces and 15 plants in Washington State. Montana also just recently changed this summer from 6 plants to 4 mature plants and 12 seedlings, which is not reflected on this chart. And the bottom has the newest states and the amounts that they allow. Most of the states now have some type of registry provision, and those individuals who are registered and have a registration card and comply with other aspects of the law are generally protected from arrest. The difference, however, that I want to focus on in this presentation relates to how individuals can gain access to marijuana if their physician recommends it. All states except New Jersey, Delaware, the District of Columbia, and Maryland permit the patient or their caregiver to grow their own marijuana, but none provides a mechanism for legally obtaining seeds or cuttings. Only about half the states authorize any kind of dispensary unless they have a dispensary law, and the laws are inconsistent on whether they permit the sale of marijuana, although often a qualifying patient is permitted to acquire marijuana. So as a result, in many states, or most states, patients have to resort to getting the drug from an illegal source on the street. Given the vagaries of the state laws regarding dispensaries, over the last few years, especially since the announcement in 2009 of the Obama administration not to enforce the Controlled Substances Act in states that have decriminalized medical marijuana, there has been a significant increase in the number of dispensaries in some states that have decriminalized medical marijuana, and a corresponding backlash from local governments in these states. To give you a sense of what is going on in some localities, in Los Angeles in 2007, the city council adopted a moratorium on new dispensaries, but they didn't really enforce it. And many new dispensaries started up after the moratorium. And estimates of the number of dispensaries in LA in 2009 ranged from 500 to 1,000. A number of those dispensaries sought waivers from the moratorium, and others brought legal challenges to the ordinance against the moratorium. The moratorium was to stay in effect until the City Council could develop regulations for their operation and establishment. And after debating the regulations for actually several years, in January of 2010, they came out with regulations which would limit the number of dispensaries to 70. The ordinance prohibited dispensaries from locating next to a residential area or within a 1,000-foot radius of a school, park, library, or other dispensary. and they limited their hours of operation and required that they install web-based closed-circuit cameras to monitor the premises and provide a uniform security guard patrol for a two-block radius surrounding the dispensary while it's operating. The ordinance was challenged, however, and found to violate various laws, and as a result, it appears now that there will be a lottery to choose 100 from among those dispensaries that can prove they were in existence as of September 14, 2007, the date the city's moratorium on new stores took effect. Other cities have gone through similar challenges, concerned that their initial law is resulting in too easy access to marijuana for those who want to smoke it recreationally who are not ill. Billings, Montana, approved a temporary moratorium on the opening of new marijuana dispensaries shortly after firebombs were tossed at two such businesses. Kalispell, Montana, banned any new medical marijuana stores in the city following the bludgeoning death of a patient after authorities believed or thought that it was related to the theft of medical marijuana plants from the stores. And it seems likely that concerns about these kinds of problems have led states that have passed more recent laws try to more strictly regulate the growth and availability of marijuana for medical purposes, at the same time being sensitive to this criticism that in most states force people who want to use the drug for medical purposes to buy it from illegal sources. So as a result, more recent state laws are providing for the establishment of dispensaries. And the regulations that are being drafted and enforced at the state and local level typically are efforts to respond to the perception by public officials and residents that dispensaries attract crime and create a public health nuisance, and to more tightly regulate them. And of course, there's also the concern really at the state and federal level of diversion and abuse. So one could say there's been kind of an evolution in the regulation of dispensaries from no control to some control to fairly extensive control. And also states have split on whether regulation is occurring at the state level, the local level, or some combination. It appears that 18 jurisdictions that the 18 jurisdictions that have passed laws decriminalizing medical marijuana can be divided, I would say, into three groups as regards the way in which they are dealing with dispensaries. The first group I would characterize as the state laws actually do either not address or do not allow dispensaries. And those states include Alaska, Hawaii, Maryland, Michigan, Montana, Nevada, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington State. Then there are what I would call the newer laws, where the statutes themselves actually address dispensaries, and they can be referred to really as state-run or state-regulated dispensaries, and the statutes themselves include extensive regulation. Those states include Arizona, Maine, New Jersey, D.C., Delaware, New Mexico, and Rhode Island. And establishment of these dispensaries are subject to much more control and regulation than in other states. Typically, a dispensary in these states must obtain a license from the state's Department of Health or other local licensing authority and pay a licensing fee. And in these states, there's also much more control being exercised over the number of dispensaries that may be established. And then the third group, I only include two states, California and Colorado. And those are older laws, and the laws either permit dispensaries, or the initial laws did, or they did not, and then subsequently said that they did allow them. But they still have very limited regulation at the state level and leave detailed regulation to the local level. And in some states where the law does not address dispensaries or allow them, dispensaries have still been established. And the examples there are Michigan and Montana. But in September in Michigan, a court ruled that marijuana may not be sold. So that essentially made dispensaries illegal there. As a result, the 300 to 400 dispensaries or estimated dispensaries in Michigan will have to close or face the possibility of criminal prosecution unless the ruling is reversed by the state Supreme Court. And there has been an appeal that was just filed earlier this month in Michigan to do that. Montana is also an interesting case study. As the state passed its initial law decriminalizing medical marijuana in 2004, and up until 2009, there were relatively few dispensaries. And after 2009, there was a big jump in the number of dispensaries to almost 5,000. And in response, the state repealed the 2004 just this summer and enacted a much more stringent law. Perhaps the most significant aspect of that new law for the purposes of this presentation is that it provides that local governments may prohibit storefront businesses. As I said, California and Colorado are probably the two states where there is the most activity at the local level regarding regulation of dispensaries, and are probably the two states with the largest number of dispensaries. This map shows the number of dispensaries in different areas of Colorado. There are 736 with license applications on file with the state. Both, I'd say, Colorado and California are considered the Wild West of medical marijuana dispensaries. Their initial laws, as I said, didn't mention dispensaries or at least did not provide any detailed regulation of them. And they have left regulation really to the local level, and there's a great variation across localities in terms of how they are regulating these dispensaries. In terms of the kinds of regulations which are being passed to govern dispensaries at the state level, generally the laws, among other things, set the maximum number to be licensed by the state. Some require dispensaries to provide educational information to qualifying patients. So in New Jersey, for example, this information is specified and includes limitations on the right to possess and use marijuana pursuant to state law, potential side effects of marijuana use, differing strengths of products dispensed, safe techniques for use, alternative methods and forms of consumption or inhalation, signs and symptoms of substance abuse, opportunities to participate in substance abuse programs, and information on tolerance, dependence, and withdrawal. State-level regulations are also set extensive requirements for application and approval for state license. For example, some require proof that the board have at least one physician, nurse, or other healthcare provider. Others require that applicants have experience running a business. So, for example, in the District of Columbia, board members or directors must demonstrate experience in business management or have medical, industry, or horticultural experience. Delaware requires board members and principal officers to have training or professional licensing related to medicine, pharmaceuticals, natural treatments, botany, nonprofit experience, or marijuana cultivation experience. The applicants must also have a plan for record keeping and security of health records. Some establish limits on the amount that may be dispensed over a certain time period. 5 out of 9 of the states require that dispensaries must be not for profit. Virtually all of the regulations in these states require that the dispensaries not be located close to a school. 7 of the laws require, or regulations, that dispensaries keep records of each sale. Some create limits on what infused products manufacturers can produce. So, for example, New Jersey limits production not only to dried marijuana, but also to marijuana lozenges and marijuana lotions. Some require the dispensary to obtain a food establishment license if it manufactures infused products. Some laws also regulate advertising. For example, several states require that the dispensary have their permit on display. Some limit how the facility may describe itself. So, for example, D.C. law states that a dispensary cannot use the words pharmacy, apothecary, or drugstore in its name. A few states create testing requirements to ensure medical marijuana quality. Some create extensive product labeling standards, in particularly D.C. and New Jersey. Most jurisdictions also have extensive requirements when it comes to security and surveillance systems. Many require 24/7 surveillance and specify areas to be recorded by video camera. Most also require that dispensaries have an alarm system, and many require that the facility have panic buttons. Most have detailed storage requirements for the marijuana, and a number have very specific requirements for the facilities. Delaware uniquely establishes safety compliance facilities, which are nonprofit entities established to provide testing of marijuana produced for medical use for potency and contaminants. And they may also train cardholders and prospective dispensary agents about safe processing and handling techniques and security and inventory accountability procedures. But despite these new efforts by states to more tightly control the availability of marijuana through state-licensed dispensaries and licensed growing facilities, recently there has been some pushback on the part of the Justice Department to this approach to making marijuana available to qualified patients. Recently, within like the last 6-7 months, the Justice Department has written letters to governors in over half of the states that have decriminalized marijuana regarding their laws or regulations that set up a licensing scheme for the establishment of dispensaries or grow houses. And these letters have stated that such licensing schemes may permit large-scale cultivation and distribution, and that the Department of Justice would consider civil and criminal legal remedies regarding those who set up marijuana growing facilities and dispensaries, as they will be doing so in violation of federal law. And those letters have prompted some states to put a halt to licensing plans for dispensaries for growing facilities. The letters have led to the state of Arizona filing a complaint for declaratory judgment against the Department of Justice, and others requesting a determination as to whether the Arizona state law complies with federal law or whether it should be declared preempted or in whole or in part. Subsequently, the Department of Justice and others have filed motions to dismiss the case, but as far as I know, that has not been acted upon yet. A potential result of this federal action, I think, is that we're going to see more marijuana in these states sold in small storefront facilities rather than in these larger licensed dispensaries. But I think it also raises a question as to whether that is the best way to deliver medical marijuana from a public health and safety perspective. Certainly, one argument against the approach the federal government is taking is that it's usually much easier to regulate fewer facilities, and most of these new state laws limit the number of dispensaries that can be established to a fairly small number. It seemed easier to regulate these fewer facilities than to regulate hundreds of individuals growing marijuana or selling it in small storefront dispensaries. There's been also a recent RAND report that had shed some doubt on the assertion that medical marijuana dispensaries increase crime in the areas in which they're located. Some of you may have heard about this study, which was actually quite controversial. The study looked at closures of medical marijuana dispensaries in LA and crime in the vicinity before and after the closures. The authors found that crime increased in the vicinity of the closed dispensaries relative to the vicinity of dispensaries allowed to remain open. They actually had several hypotheses as to why that might be the case. One was that operating dispensaries may have reduced crime by providing additional on-site security, that dispensaries may reduce crime by increasing local foot traffic and, quote, eyes on the street, end quote, or to the extent that illicit suppliers actually may move in to fill the new void after a dispensary closes. That could generate other crime. That there is greater police presence in areas where dispensaries are operating, and kind of correspondingly, police may leave areas after a dispensary closes. But the report was strongly criticized by Los Angeles city attorneys, who demanded that the report be retracted. And the city attorney's office has argued in court that crime associated with dispensaries is a key reason the city needs to limit the number. According to the LA Times, the city's attorney's office called the report's conclusions, quote, highly suspect and unreliable, saying that they were based on faulty assumptions, conjecture, irrelevant data, untested measurements, and incomplete results. Officials at the office went on to say that until you, meaning the RAND Corporation, publicly retract your work, we expect the RAND publication to be referenced nationwide at incalculable, avoidable harm to public health and safety. One of the criticisms was that the researchers only looked at crime statistics 10 days before and 10 days after closure of the dispensaries. As a result, RAND actually did remove the report from its website and just a week or so ago officially retracted it. In an online article responding to the LA Times article, Allison Hewitt referred to another study in 2007 by Bridget Freisler, an associate professor of social welfare at UCLA's Luskin School of Public Affairs, that showed that crime within 100 feet of medical marijuana dispensaries was less than crime within the same distance of a liquor store, bar, and even a restaurant. Freisler's study was also only a point in time, and so she plans to expand her study to do it longer term. And just in closing, I wanted to share with you that I'm involved in designing a study with colleagues at the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy's Center for Drugs and Public Policy, and we're also interested in looking at, among other things, public health factors related to regulation of dispensaries. Our interest can be summed up in two questions that if people have time during question and answers, maybe they can suggest answers or contact me. One is, what are important regulations of dispensaries to have in place from a public health and public safety perspective? And two, what data would you want to draw on in addition to crime statistics in the area where the dispensaries are located to establish whether various regulations are having a good or bad impact on public health and safety? Thank you very much.